Hello, Thrive Nation. Welcome to the Made to Thrive show. And on this episode,
this is a really important thing for people to understand, because if you don't know how to use your eyes properly from a cardiometabolic, neuroendocrine, neuropsychiatric standpoint, you are going to get sick. It is inevitable in the modern world with the light environment that we live under.
Hello, Thrivers. I'm Steve Stavs, your host of the Made to Thrive show. It's a truly special episode today, which is packed with life-transforming performance hacks. Apply the basic eye health lifestyle and you'll start seeing incredible changes straight away. The guest today is an internationally recognized ophthalmic surgeon, Dr. Jay Montgomery. He has a unique quantum perspective, having gotten ill himself due to blue light toxicity. Dr. Jay had to ditch decades of traditional training and education as Western medicine continued to fail him. He's now dedicated to educating the masses about the quantum effects of the modern light environment on health and disease. We discuss so many fundamental health topics. For example, did you know, and yes, it might sound crazy, but sunglasses are damaging your health. Yes, yes, yes. I've got the experts and the studies to back up this statement. The truth must be told despite big pharma, big tech, and big bullies dominating the narrative on so many aspects of our health lives. We unpack today how it took Dr. Jay getting ill to question traditional ophthalmology, why the eye is your most important metabolic organ, the critical importance of the retinal hypothalamic tract to your health, Dr. Jay's non-negotiable circadian routine, how hiding from the sun is as toxic as smoking cigarettes, the critical importance of melatonin to sleep and therefore health, how all glasses and contact lenses block the light you need, what to do about dry eyes and the connection between light and inflammation, the evolutionary need for more sun for native Africans. This episode once again is sponsored by F45 Bryanston. This is my go-to functional training class, which is a mix of circuit and high intensity interval training style workouts geared to everyday movements. I'm there at least twice a week giving it my all, which has helped me strengthen my overall body and ensure that I sustain my anaerobic fitness. F45 is offering the Made to Thrive community a free week's training that could be 6 classes for free. Drop me a mail at connect@madetothrive.co.za and I'll send you the details. Join the Thrive community by subscribing to our newsletter at madetothrive.co.za and find us on Facebook at madetothrive.za, Steve Stavs ZA, and on Instagram at Steve Stavs ZA, and at LinkedIn at Steve Stavs. Please send me your questions, feedback, and any areas of health that you would like me to cover. I do need your help. If you're on Apple, please rate and review the show, and on Android, please download and share. Thank you so much. Delight in your purpose and be surrounded. Hello, Thrive Nation. Welcome to another show of the Made to Thrive show. My name is Steve Stavs, professional biohacker and performance coach. And how are you thrivers doing out there? I've got an international thriving medical hero with me. His YouTube clip of 2 hours on quantum eye health is a must watch. It is filled with such content. It's blown me away. I'm still trying to unpack it in many times because it is just so complex. And so I've eventually got him on the show because it's been months and months to try and just pin him down. Obviously, all his commitments as an eye surgeon in America. He's a family man. He's a Trinitarian believer, which is incredible. And when I saw that, I said, wow, yeah, we can connect over internet from different continents. Welcome to the show, Dr. Jay Montgomery.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on and just trying to get the message out. Always enjoy talking to like-minded physicians around the world, really. So this is an exciting time. I think we can make a big difference with the message.
Absolutely. And, you know, my community, I'm going to ask them the question, what is a doctor? You know, and I'm going to say it again. Doctor comes from the etymology, docere, which means teacher. And so here we've got a really incredible teacher, not only a teacher, but an eye surgeon with over 20 years experience. And he is a quantum eye surgeon. And we're going to unpack that in the show today. And we've been, I think a privilege for both of us is meeting Dr. Jack Cruz. And he's been on the show. And he's had thousands and thousands of downloads on the Made to Thrive show, our most popular show locally and internationally. And so grateful that we've tapped into quantum biology. And so, Dr. J, you were a conventional eye surgeon, just knowing a little bit about your story from YouTube. Tell me, what happened that transitioned you from a conventional eye surgeon to a quantum eye surgeon?
Yeah, that, you know, it's a great question. It's always good to know where people come from. And so as a raised and trained in America, I was in the traditional allopathic medicine pathway. And so became an ophthalmologist about 22 years ago. And, you know, most of our training, if not all, is designed around the vision pathway of the eye and the retina and the intracranial pathway. So, you know, really not a lot of quantum physics, not anything about circadian biology was really much discussed in our training. And so I spent my career as a cataract refractive glaucoma surgeon and also treating a lot of diabetic retinopathy. But it took myself getting sick to actually open my eyes, so to speak, to the other pathway that the eye is, has, which is basically the circadian clock. And so what happened to me is, you know, in my late 30s, I started having some health issues, particularly daily migraines, insomnia, some endocrinopathies. And then by my mid 40s, I continued down that path on multiple different pharmaceuticals and developed vestibular cochlear neuritis, which is a chronic form of Meniere's disease, and was really seeking disability in my early to mid 40s because of that. And when the neurotologist, the surgeon, told me my only option was a transcranial nerve resection, I just decided that no, this is not the route that I'm going to take. And I really started investigating this on my own. And, you know, traditional medicine had failed me. At that point, I'm on 7 different prescription medicines. I'm miserable. My personality had changed. My wife will tell you, I was a different person and not a very good physician at the time, in my opinion, because my thought processing was slower. And so I started looking into this for myself, and I realized that mitochondria were a big part of my problem. But I didn't really understand it because in our traditional training, mitochondria are considered, you know, an important organelle, but really kind of on the side as far as just the ATP producers or the powerhouses. I didn't understand the complex interaction between quantum physics, light, and the circadian pathway that mitochondria have. But through some videos of Dr. Doug Wallace, who Jack talks about a lot, I've actually found Doug Wallace first. And I was convinced, as he lays out a really, you know, intriguing research on the fact that most, if not all, chronic medical diseases are mitochondrial dysfunction. And so I became convinced that my problem was a neuroinflammatory problem that involved multiple different pathways, was this, you know, basically failing my mitochondria. And so then I started researching ways, well, so how do we fix mitochondria? What do we do to improve it? And so I'm on a ton of different supplements at the time that were, you know, quote, designed to improve mitochondria and having no success. And then I heard a podcast with Jack Cruz, and he challenged my views. In fact, he offended me a little bit as an ophthalmologist because he doesn't have real nice things to say about traditional ophthalmology. And to be honest with you, in my position now, I totally agree with him. But at the time, it challenged my view. And I'm someone who, if you challenge me, I'm either going to defend it or I'm going to look and see why it is that you're challenging me. And the more I dug into the quantum biology, the light physiology, and particularly the retinal hypothalamic tract, which we can talk about more, the more I realized that it was right. And so I started implementing these things for myself. And within a few months, and I was actually much better. And within a year, I'm off of all medications, most supplements. My mental capacity has returned to, you know, to my mid-20s. And I'm, as your show says, I'm thriving at this point. And really, I owe it all to just improving mitochondrial health through light environment and some other things that we can discuss.
Yeah, sure. But I do want to ask you, it's obviously gone from pain to purpose. You were a sick man and you were seeking some other type of alternative treatment that because conventional medicine had not helped you. It's Dr. Jack Cruz that stands up to give a lecture and tears his meniscus. I'm speaking to a doctor of interventional radiology yesterday across the world who has got diabetes at the age of 44. He's on 7 prescription medicines and then eventually decides to study functional medicine and writes a book on thriving. It seems that it's only suffering that sort of causes either physicians or patients to then make the changes. So my question is to you, I've got a 16-year-old and I've got a 4-year-old. I know you've got 4 children. How can we get people to change their narrative from sick care to preventative health care? Because it just seems, had you not been sick, you probably might have not researched Doug Wallace or Jack Cruz. You wouldn't have been listening and you wouldn't have been open to making those changes, as many of your colleagues possibly are. They're well, they're possibly healthy, or they're just taking 1 or 2 prescription medications without significant disability, and they're not open to hearing another truth. So tell me, in simple question, how do we change the narrative to preventative healthcare?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And I think, unfortunately, particularly from the physician side, our paradigm, we are so indoctrinated with a pharmaceutical mindset that we wait until we find the disease and then we treat it with the appropriate medicine instead of actually looking from a preventive standpoint. You know, one of my favorite movies is The Matrix, and we talk a lot about the red versus the blue pill. Yeah. I mean, we are essentially living in a modern world that is a matrix. It is created, and the truths that we're told are partial truths, as Jack says. And, you know, unfortunately, until you either get sick or you have someone close to you get sick and modern medicine fails you, sometimes I think it's hard for people to see. I see diabetics every day and they are literally heading toward dialysis. And usually by the time they get to me, they have severe retinopathy. And so they need, pharmaceuticals have a place. But if we can get, as you mentioned, if we can get to younger people, healthy people, and help them stay on that track lifelong, I think we can meet them. And honestly, I'm seeing a turn in that in America. I'm seeing, I have, like you said, I had 4 teenagers at home, and a lot of their friends, they're asking questions. I've got a lot of them wearing blue blockers and paying attention to the amount of artificial light that they're exposed to, getting them outside, getting them away from, you know, the Wi-Fi as much as we can, particularly when they're sleeping. We can talk about those things, but I do see that some of the younger population, because they're seeing their peers getting particularly neuropsychiatric diseases very commonly, the suicide rates are exploding in that population, at least in America. Mm-hmm. And I think they're starting to pay attention that, hey, there's something wrong with our generation. And what I'm trying to convince them, and no, it's mostly your environment and the approach that you take, particularly with light, nutrition, and then the fact that they're actually indoors all the time.
Great answer. And I think encapsulated in that is just education and teaching and modeling and walking it out, and your children wearing the blue blocking glasses. It's getting a little bit darker now here in South Africa. It's getting a bit later here, but wearing those glasses, modeling it, and then being able to explain, you know, why 96% of the Japanese teenage population is myopic. You know, why is that the case? You know, yes, we've been reading for generations, but there's some other factors, the non-native electromagnetic fields, the blue light, which is part of that, that is destroying people's health. And how important are your eyes? Your eyes, not only from a circadian point of view, but just the camera itself is so important for you having a thriving lifestyle. But Doc, I do want to talk about your light diet being as important as your food diet. That's the narrative that we declare and preach at Made to Thrive. People frown upon me. They're bewildered when I say this. They are freaked out that this guy doesn't know what he's talking about in terms of his light diet. Can you explain to me how important is your light diet?
Yeah, well, I think it's important. I don't know how technical you want me to get, but
we go deep into, I really appreciate that.
Well, when you understand, and I'm going to say something that's, you know, is very controversial in the allopathic ophthalmology, but I would say that the eye, in my opinion, is the most important neuroendocrine, neuropsychiatric, metabolic organ that we have. And when you understand how the circadian rhythm works and the fact that the retina is the metronome for the circadian clock. And so there's a very detailed pathway, which honestly, in my training of 4 years in medical school and 4 years of ophthalmology training, may have gotten one paragraph in a textbook or any basic science study. It's the retinohypothalamic tract. And so what that is there are these retinal ganglion cells, which in traditional medicine we are taught simply are the neurons that transmit vision or the camera function of the eye across the chiasm to the occipital lobe in the back of the brain. And that's where vision, and vision's important. We know that from a lifestyle standpoint. However, from a metabolic and health standpoint, the retinohypothalamic tract is extremely important. And there are about 5% of the retinal ganglion cells that are called, they are intrinsically photosensitive, which means that you have neurons which are outside the visual pathway that detect light that actually is a timing, energy, and information for their master circadian clock of the suprachiasmatic nucleus. So from the retina, the retinohypothalamic tract, and this is not new. This was actually discussed, you know, in the early 1800s by Ernst Horn, who discussed what he called the vegetative pathway. And then Fritz Hollwitz discussed the energetic pathway as early as the 1940s. The problem is that it has been kind of pushed aside by modern medicine because honestly, most of the money that modern medicine can make is only on the camera function of the eye. There's a lack of research in this process because on it, most of the things that we can do to optimize it are free. And so when you start looking at it from that perspective, you realize what's driving the research. But so the retinohypothalamic tract ends in the suprachiasmatic nucleus. From there, there are multiple projections to the pituitary gland as well as the pineal gland. And we're all familiar with the pituitary. It's the basic hormone producer or master hormone producer in the hypothalamus. You have these mechanisms that transmit information to every cell in the body. And so the peripheral clocks in each cell are controlled by the suprachiasmatic nucleus, which gets its timing, energy, and information from the retinohypothalamic tract. This is a really important thing for people to understand because if you don't know how to use your eyes properly from a cardiometabolic, neuroendocrine, neuropsychiatric standpoint, you are going to get sick. It is inevitable in the modern world with the light environment that we live under.
Great. So if I just had to simplify, how important is compared to your food diet? I mean, we've got nutritionists all over the world. There's a big food movement. And I know Dr. Jack Cruz sort of just hammers a couple of these sort of nutritionists and sort of food gurus out there because they sort of lack their knowledge and sort of, you know, declaration of the light diet. How important is the light diet, in your lifestyle?
Well, I think, you know, if you look at what controls every metabolic process in the body, it is the circadian clock. And if we understand that light is the single most important and powerful Zeitgeber, which is an environmental cue to the circadian rhythm, without a proper circadian rhythm, you can't metabolize food. And so it doesn't matter what you're eating. If you can't metabolize it properly, and even if you're eating a really healthy diet, when you have signals to the cell and to the mitochondria that are out of sync, then you're going to produce excessive free radicals at the mitochondrial level. And we know that mitochondria control the nuclear DNA. That's not controversial. And if you can't control the free radical signal from mitochondria to the nuclear genome, you are going to turn on or off genes that will make you sick. So I'm not someone who thinks that nutrition doesn't matter at all. Okay. But when we moved down, because I was actually very into a ketogenic, you know, diet. I was a CrossFitter for years. I did all the diet nutrition things right, and I still got sick. Steve, I was glucose intolerant, eating less than 50 grams of carbs per day. How does that happen? Well, it happens because I'm an ophthalmologist. I stare into a microscope 8 hours a day with an extremely bright LED light. So I was completely blue light toxic, and I had no idea. I didn't understand that. And so you can become glucose intolerant from a an improper light diet. So if you eat junk light, just like junk food, if you consume it, you're going to get sick because you're going to increase the free radical signals from in your mitochondria all over your body. It just happened to be in my brain, which is, you know, the brain actually has more mitochondria per neuron and cell than anywhere in the body other than the heart. So the neurologic disease is extremely common for people like me who became blue light toxic.
Wow, Doc, that's incredible. And that information and content is not well known, even with the ophthalmologists, well, specifically the ophthalmologists here in South Africa. They're looking into a microscope, getting blue light toxic, causing major hormonal problems and metabolic problems in their bodies, even when they've got the right movement program, even when they've got the right food program in place. So that's significant. Being an ophthalmologist, being a quantum biologist, take us through your day from, and maybe, you know, I do say this sort of little meme is that your morning starts the night before, you know, so, and I think it's important. We talk about morning routines, Tim Ferriss and everybody, how do you wake up, the 5 a.m. club, but Robin Sharma, but literally your morning starts the night before. So maybe take us through just your circadian day. You well-versed. I think it's important. If someone's listening out there, they're saying, okay, let's listen to Dr. J and how he manages his circadian biology.
Sure. So I have, in my mind, I have a 10-step process from a circadian standpoint. And it's every day, and now it's just routine for me. So obviously, as you said, your circadian day starts the night before. So it will start there. So it's really important that you have a consistent sleep time. That you have, and that's going to vary. I mean, we all have engagements in the evening that we can't miss, but it, you know, you can be 95%. If you go to bed at, and I go to bed at 9:30, and if I'm not in bed by 9:30 during the week, you know, I'm really struggling a little bit, but you want to have consistent bedtime. You want to, obviously we can talk about sleep hygiene, but that's outside the scope of this, but you have a sleep cave. And so you need to sleep until right before sunrise. And for me, I get up, and I don't even have an alarm clock anymore. I don't need one because I wake up literally about 10 minutes before sunrise every day with no alarm clock now. And I'll give you a little side on that. I was never a morning person. And I thought until I was in my mid 40s that I'm just not a morning person. I just can't do it. I feel horrible in the morning. I always have to have an alarm clock. Well, I can tell you that all changed when I started paying attention to these principles. So you need to arise at a consistent time. And honestly, your body will develop that the more consistent you can be. And you won't need an alarm clock. And so I get up, and the first thing I do, the first light I want to see of the day is the natural light outdoors. So if it happens to be a day that I've got an engagement that I have to get up, you know, 30 minutes before the sun rises, I put on my nighttime blue blockers because I don't want to have any screens or LEDs or anything until I see the morning sun. But the first light of the day I want on my eyes and as much skin as possible is the natural sunlight. So I go outside and I'll spend, you know, 20 to 30 minutes outdoors first thing. Okay. And so then after I've done that, I walk in, put on my daytime blue blockers, which I wear Blue Tech, which blocks about 60% of the blue. So I come in and then I'll eat breakfast because food is also a circadian Zeitgeber. It's an external source. So your GI system does have a circadian system and food can be a circadian cue. But when it's linked to the light environment, it's much more powerful because then you have the process of the hypothalamus, which through the vagus nerve controls your GI process. You're going to metabolize food so much better. So I eat about 30 minutes to an hour after that initial sun exposure. And then I will get intermittent exposure at least throughout the day. And so if it's a weekend or day off, I'm outside as much as I can be. But during my work day, I have scheduled, you know, 5 to 10 minutes where I go outside, glasses off. You know, if I'm somewhere behind the building, I'll take my shirt off. I'll get sun exposure on at least my eyes intermittently throughout the day. I call them quantum sampling. So I want my eyes to get their timing, energy, and information throughout the day from the sun, not from screens like we're staring at now, because I do that all day. And so I'm getting, and here's another point people may not realize is the sunrise has a color temperature of about 1800 Kelvin. Midday sun is about 6,000 Kelvin. Our screens that we stare at are all about 6,000. So if the first light of your day is a screen, you're checking emails from the night before or text messages, you just communicated to your brain, your suprachiasmatic nucleus, the master clock, that it's noon when it's actually 6:30 in the morning. And so you have just dysregulated your circadian rhythm at the start of your day. So then the rest of the day, when I get off, I want to be outside as much as possible. You know, I exercise, but I do it outdoors when it's appropriate and, you know, not cold rain or sleet. And then I will actually watch sunset every day. But an important thing, I do early time restricted feeding, which means I finish my last meal of the day as much as possible before the sun goes down, because we are designed to energize our body with the communication from the sun, from light. So, and then I want to have finished every food consumption, no alcohol, within about 3 to 4 hours of bedtime. And the reason for that is your GI system takes time to metabolize food. If you don't do that appropriately, so you eat within an hour of bedtime, you are going to create massive free radicals in your cells, because the timing from the light environment to your GI system is off, and the cellular timing is off. And so you've just created reactive oxygen species, and you can't perform the important tasks during sleep like autophagy and apoptosis, which are absolutely critical during our sleep time. I like to get about 7 to 8 hours of sleep per night, but it's really important, you know, after the sun goes down, to put those nighttime blue blockers on. And those are what I typically use. I have them here. These are the BPI 550s. They are the red color. And so these go on after sunset every day. And I'll wear them no matter where I am. And, you know, it's interesting. It generates a lot of discussion with people. So it's a nice segue. Some people, you know, think you're a little odd, but once they understand the science behind it, to be honest with you, most of them actually want to know where they can get them. And so it's a way that I can open dialogue with people who may otherwise not be interested. But that's kind of the way my day looks. And I would say 9 out of 10 days, and then I'll have, you know, a social engagement. And we all suffer from social jet lag in our modern world. And so we have to, I mean, it takes me 2 or 3 days if I have a late night for something to, just like, you know, many of the food gurus talk about, you know, if you're low carb and then you eat a pizza, it takes them 2 or 3 days to actually feel back to normal. Well, once you're in tune with your light environment, it's exactly the same way. The difference is, before I started doing this, I felt bad all the time. So I didn't really know what being in tune with the light environment actually meant or felt like.
Great. Thank you for your circadian day there, Dr. J. I just want to unpack it slightly, because we've just got different creeds and colors and skin tones here in Africa and beyond. And, you know, the interesting stats coming out of, I think, Stockholm and Copenhagen was that a lot of the African population, the very dark Africans from Kenya and Somalia, had significant problems with C19 just because of their UV light exposure, causing significant sort of mitochondrial heteroplasmy. And so I do want to know that, look, I spent 2 hours in the sun. The UV index was sitting at 11 today. It was an incredible time. I'm swimming with my daughter, and I've got a Mediterranean Greek sort of heritage. So how much time do people need in the sun? Obviously, we all need to see the sunrise and try and do that, because that's important. That starts that suprachiasmatic nucleus, that circadian clock, as you've mentioned. But how much sun do they need to get, Dr. J?
It's a great question, and it's one that, you know, from a general standpoint, it's hard to answer, because, like you said, it does matter, the skin type, your ancestry, the latitude that you live at, and the time of year. Because, you know, for me, I was a Fitzpatrick too, or am, and there are ways that you can develop UV tolerance over time, but you have to do it properly. What I typically advise people is, you know, if you're a Fitzpatrick 1 or 2, you need to be careful. Okay, because usually the 3s and 4s, they're much more UV tolerant naturally. So the DMinder app, and I have no financial interest in any of these things, but the DMinder app is a good place to start. Okay, it's not going to allow you to overexpose yourself. So you can put your skin type, your latitude, the time of year, and it will give you an appropriate amount of skin exposure given the UV index at the latitude that you're at. And I would start there, but there are ways that you can improve. Like, for instance, as a two, I would actually burn after about 30 minutes in any UV index over about six. Now I have developed a solar callus UV tolerance where I can go to the Riviera Maya, Mexico, and I can be outside 6 to 8 hours a day in the UV index of 11 with no sunscreen. I do put a little bit of non-nano zinc on my nose, but everywhere else is fine. And so your body is unbelievably adaptable if you do it the right way, but you can't get intermittent overexposure the way the modern human does and expect not to have some skin damage, because it's not possible. But there are ways to do it safely, and it's really important to get the appropriate dose of ultraviolet light for you, and your personal context matters. And so you have to educate yourself on what your context is and learn how to use the sun properly. Light has a bimodal response curve, which means that if you get too little, it's not good. If you get too much, it's not good. So there's a actually sweet spot for each of us, and we have to learn what that is. And it would be no different than the amount of food that you eat, the amount of medication dose that you take. You may have to adjust that depending on your particular metabolism and your context.
Right. And what about looking at some blood markers, looking at vitamin D, NGs per ml? There's a lot of controversy. Many, many years ago, 22 years ago, when I started functional medicine, you know, in South Africa, the range was 30 NGs per ml to 100. And now all of a sudden, they're looking at 30, 20 to 40, in fact. And I'm sort of shocked. And, you know, people are saying, what's going on here? If we look across the board, and obviously we're sitting at the 26 degree latitude here in Johannesburg, and it's mainly the clients I'm seeing, where should their vitamin D levels be about?
Yeah, you know, obviously I consider 30 very low. Okay. And so the range of 30 to 100, which is what the labs use in America, 30 is probably two standard deviations away from the mean, which I think is horrible. And so we typically recommend at least 60. And, you know, that's from sun exposure. Now, I'm not completely opposed to vitamin supplementation in a short-term period, but understanding that you are completely missing the photonic energy and the bioactive metabolites from LDL cholesterol to 25-hydroxy vitamin D, which is, you know, down the line, you're missing all those biometabolites. So I would say 60 and above, and mine currently is about 75, and we're in, you know, the middle of winter here. So, but typically what I do is I take a couple of trips south, you know, during the winter for a week to supplement with a little better UV. I'm at the 34th latitude. So we get some UV index about five or six here right now. So we're in, you know, we're outside of vitamin D winter, but depending on where you are, you may have to do things a little differently, but you have to pay attention. Vitamin D is extremely important. As you know, most of the chronic diseases, all of the epithelial cancers, they're all associated with low vitamin D. And if you make vitamin D from the sun, then you look at the studies out of the Swedish melanoma study, which shows that all-cause mortality is increased by sun avoidance on the order of moderate to heavy cigarette smoking. So we're doing a great disservice for our society by telling them to avoid the sun, to wear sunscreen, sunglasses, hats. I mean, you need a proper dose of sun. I mean, there's no question about it. And vitamin D is a great biomarker for your quantum yield.
And now when I spoke to Dr. Jack, I said, I need to get hold of Dr. Jay because he's the quantum eye surgeon in the world and he's the leading quantum ophthalmologist. Where are our quantum dermatologists? Because if they hear this conversation, they believe that obviously UV, you know, radiation is damage, causes oxidative stress. And it's this whole narrative that the sun causes cancer and that you need all these sun creams on. And it's literally the opposite according to the research. A fantastic book that I sometimes recommend is Embracing the Sun by, I think, Sorensen. But tell me, where's the quantum dermatologist? We finished this call now. I need to get hold of a quantum dermatologist to speak on how important UV light is, firstly to our eyes, which you're gonna unpack for me, and then obviously very important to melanopsin and all the opsins in our body. Where are the quantum dermatologists, Doc?
You know, I think that's a great question. Unfortunately, I think like most ophthalmologists, they are indoctrinated in this paradigm, and most of the income they make is on skin cancer and, you know, Mohs surgery and, you know, skin disease. So if you believe that sun is bad and avoiding the sun is actually increasing the rates of skin problems, then you're actually, you know, you're perpetuating the problem. I don't know the answer to that. I've talked to multiple dermatologists, even ones that I've seen, and they don't believe this. They're not going to say that no sun exposure is a good thing, but anything more than, you know, 5 to 10 minutes. I know young people, 20-year-olds who have melanoma on non-exposed skin. Okay, get this, like the plantar aspect of the foot. And they've been told by their dermatologist, you need to avoid sun for the rest of your life. So I have a hard time understanding where that perspective comes from. I mean, this person has a melanoma on the sole of their foot, and yet we're blaming the sun exposure. And most of these people haven't had much sun exposure by the time they're 20 anyway. So that's a question that I can't answer. And unfortunately, I think that, you know, there's a huge, you know, massive research that they've done using only UV light. And when you take UV out of the solar spectrum, which has infrared, which is a very protective, regenerative light that decreases the oxidative damage of just UV. So yes, if you expose people to only UV, like tanning beds, or, you know, the lab, the mice and the different animals they subjected to in their studies, you will probably get issues. But when you do it through the natural sun, the spectrum of the sun, which has, you know, one time with 80 zeros behind it of wavelengths, you're not going to increase the skin cancer with proper dosing.
Right. Take us through the narrative of melatonin. It's obviously a very popular hormone that people are popping. One grateful thing in South Africa, it's a Schedule 5 year melatonin, which is fantastic because people can't just go off the shelf because obviously the feedback loop. But take us through melatonin as well as take us through DHA and how important the DHA loops are, because I think that's important for people to understand that melatonin is a master antioxidant. It's very, very important. Your body needs to produce that. And it's a breakdown in your circadian biology that people start, you know, not producing the melatonin in their eyes firstly and the rest of their bodies. They then can't sleep. And then they start taking exogenous melatonin, which then perpetuates the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I think most people don't really understand. I mean, I think everybody knows that melatonin is the sleep hormone. Okay. But I don't really think they understand how widely active melatonin is. And you spoke exactly right. The stimulus to produce melatonin begins in the retina. Okay. And so when ultraviolet A light turns an electromagnetic wave into an electromechanical wave, there's a change in the molecular structure of tryptophan. Okay. And so tryptophan is the precursor to serotonin and melatonin. So without UVA light on the retina, we do not get the stimulus to produce melatonin. And so melatonin from the first of the morning UVA, that's when the stimulus to produce. So you begin producing melatonin from morning sunlight. And so that's why it's really important. If you want to get a good night's sleep, you have to get morning sun on your eyes and your skin, but your eyes particularly. There's also a mechanism where that gets actually more generalized from the retinohypothalamic tract, the suprachiasmatic nucleus, to the pineal gland. When you understand the pineal gland is a vestigial eye, okay, it's the third eye, okay? It has properties similar to, you know, our visual system eye, but that's where melatonin is stored, produced, and then released about 2 hours after sunset. But what another aspect of melatonin people don't really understand is that not only does melatonin cycling important for sleep, it's critically important for mitochondrial function. And so there are actually pathways which are now elucidated. You know that the mechanisms of circadian biology won the Nobel Prize in 2017. The research has exploded in this field in the last several years. So we know that melatonin, not only does it stabilize the mitochondrial membrane, but it controls autophagy, apoptosis, mitophagy, mitochondrial fission, fusion, all the things that make our mitochondria optimized. If you don't have proper melatonin release production, you're actually going to lose control of the cell cycle. And when you do that, you can't get rid of bad proteins. And we all know that tau proteins, which lead to Alzheimer's disease, those are just overaccumulation of bad proteins. So you don't have autophagy, you get neurodegenerative disease. When you lose the control of the cell cycle, which is controlled by melatonin, this a rapidly dividing cell, and you can't you get rid of the senescent cells, guess what? You get cancer. And so why are we seeing explosive prevalence of neurodegenerative disease and cancer in the modern world? Well, one of the reasons is because melatonin is being destroyed by the artificial light environment. And then when you take a pill for something that you're designed to create naturally from your environment, from your light exposure, as you mentioned, you create negative feedback loops and you create, you know, problems at the cellular level from this exogenous melatonin. So it's really a really bad cycle. And then people go on all the sleep medications, which lead to further deleterious effects neurologically. So yeah, it's a really massive problem.
Great. And I think that's a great summary for melatonin. And we're going to slice and dice that one for social media for sure, because I think it's very, very important. I don't think that narrative has been spoken of, well, not in the circles I know, other than Jack Cruz and his tribe and yourself. Let's move on to DHA, how important DHA is in terms of seafood, in terms of, you know, taking all shellfish. And, you know, obviously people are using these fatty acids, they're taking them exogenously, which I think have their place, but obviously they're different receptor sites. I think you talk about it in your YouTube video. But tell us about DHA and the importance.
Sure. So DHA, as we know, is, you know, omega-3 fatty acid. And so it is critically important that it is incorporated into the cell membrane. And so the cell membrane of every cell, and particularly in the neurologic system, where communication between cells has to be rapid and precise. And what's interesting is DHA is most highly concentrated in the retinohypothalamic tract that we talked about earlier. So DHA is essentially turns light energy into a DC electric current. And so if you have a proper amount of DHA incorporated into your particularly central nervous system, then you can have a much better, more efficient transmission of information from cell to cell. And why it's important that the concentration of DHA, which was discovered by Dr. Bazan down at LSU, that you have to have a large concentration of DHA in the retinohypothalamic tract because of the timing from retina to suprachiasmatic nucleus. If that information is not passed extremely efficiently and rapidly, then the timing gets off. And so we talk about different molecular forms of DHA. And so it comes in three molecular forms. And unfortunately, the vegans and the vegetarians believe you can get DHA from algae sources. But that's the problem with that is that it is in the molecular form of SN3 or SN1. You need SN2. And what that means is in the molecular shape of that omega-3 is a planar, which is like a copper wire. Okay, so if you don't have a planar DHA, you do not transmit that DC electric current efficiently. And so that creates some mistiming, if you will, from the photonic energy to the DC electric current. And so the transmission of information gets slowed. Unfortunately, if you don't eat enough seafood, particularly in the wintertime, and I talk about this a lot because, you know, if you live in a low UV environment, the two things that you absolutely have to optimize is your DHA, which is from shellfish and cold water seafood, and also cold thermogenesis. You have to actually decrease your body temperature, and we can talk about that more, but the DHA is absolutely critical. I try to have seafood 5 or 6 days a week, okay? I just had 3 dozen oysters last night. I mean, it's something I enjoy, but at the same time, I realize I've got my wife can't stomach oysters, but we do have them eating seafood. The best source of SN2 DHA is natural seafood, because when the fish or the oyster, when they consume the algae, they actually turn it in from SN3 to SN2. Then the question is, well, what about krill? What about some of the exogenous sources? I think they're okay. But the problem with that is, who knows how the lab is manipulating these? The temperature of these as they get shipped to your source is going to change the molecular form. So I think there's a lot of inconsistency. You know, if you could actually source them, have them at a cold temperature, and then get them to your house before they actually change temperature, I think you'd be much better off. But we have no control over that. And so we're actually using them on faith that not only were they handled properly, but also that they have, you know, what the bottle says they have in them. And we have no way of controlling that. So for me, natural seafood is the best source, no question.
Absolutely, Doc. And obviously, this is very, very important because I take an omega-3 supplement from a company called Zenzino. I do this, the omega-6 to omega-3 ratio, which I think is very, very important from an inflammatory point of view, getting some type of assessment. I have found it beneficial over many, many years now because you can audit it. But I guess the point is, if I could get that ratio probably to about 4-to-1 having shellfish, that would be far better than taking the exogenous.
Well, I think so. But it can be hard to do depending on where you live and which access to seafood is. I'm sure you've researched that company and feel comfortable with it. And I think part of it is, I think you can take an omega-3 supplement and the peripheral nervous system and the peripheral effects. One of the problems is that SN2 is most bioavailable to the central nervous system. And so in order to get that into your retinal hypothalamic tract, which is part of the central nervous system, it needs to be in that SN2 form. And so that's one of the issues, I think, with some of the supplements is knowing what form you're getting. Even the natural triglyceride omega-3s, they're more bioavailable from a GI standpoint, no question. But are they getting into the central nervous system? I don't know that we have an answer to that.
Great. Now, having a look at melatonin, DHA, and all the factors that we've spoken about the circadian clock, just can you explain in very simple language, because this is a very common question. We've had quite a few people from Raw Optics, Matt Maruka, to Dr. Leland Stillman talk about this, to Dr. Jack Cruz. What is the problem with sunglasses?
Yeah. So, the problem with, really not just sunglasses, but any glasses and contact lenses. So most of, if not all of those materials are going to block UV and infrared. And so when you wear sunglasses or even my blue blocking glasses, when I'm outside, I slide them down on my nose. Unless I'm doing a detailed work that I need to see precisely, I slide them down because every form of optical material blocks UV. And so that's a problem, even with our contact lenses. And I have this conversation all the time with people who are interested in the light environment and circadian biology. If you wear contact lenses, you are blocking most, if not all, UV. There's a couple of contact lens makers that actually don't block UV. They're not UV blocking. They're not commonly used because most people believe you need to block UV light, which is a mistake. But the problem with even the regular contact that doesn't block UV is blocking infrared. And so you're not getting the proper spectrum. Sunglasses worn, if you're going to be on the water all day, or if you're skiing and there is some protective benefit from sunglasses. But if you wear sunglasses all the time when you're outdoors, you are not getting the proper light signal to your eyes. And just like with regular glasses, it's important to take them off. I don't wear sunglasses at all now. And I'll be honest with you, until about, probably 6 years ago, I wasn't outside without sunglasses on. I wore contact lenses. I had sunglasses on, sunscreened up, hat, clothes. I was just complete. I had a tarp over every photoreceptor in my body. Mm-hmm. And then I wonder why I got sick. It's just amazing the thinking. I was just completely blind. I didn't know what I didn't know. And unfortunately, I think a lot of us are that way. Sunglasses became popular in the 50s. Before that, nobody wore sunglasses, or at least it was very uncommon. Now you can't go outside in the modern environment where everybody's wearing sunglasses. And what I would encourage people to do is get your eyes and skin exposed to natural light. And again, if you're going to be on the water all day, you probably do want to wear some protection, some, but at least get some intermittent exposure of your eyes to the sun. Just like, it may be that some people have more sensitive eyes to the sun than others. And I hear that from patients. But what I've found is that I was very sensitive to light, to sunlight, until I stopped wearing contacts and sunglasses. And now I literally have no problem with light sensitivity at all. And I think that speaks to the adaptability of the retina, the photoreceptors, the retinal pigment epithelium, in actually using the light energy the way it's supposed to be, instead of actually being the vitamin A cycle being completely disrupted by blue light, which is another discussion.
Fantastic, Doc. But I'm just bewildered that this knowledge and this truth is not out there, because It is, you know, just so uncommon for people to even understand that, you know, basically wearing sunglasses the whole time is damaging not only your eyes, it's damaging your hormonal health, your metabolic function. It's going to lead to disease and sickness, but it's just so foreign to so many people. And I hear you, there are some very rare exceptions if you're on the water with a glare or skiing with a glare. But, you know, I took about 6 months to wean myself off sunglasses and I have no problem now. I think most people are sensitive to sunlight just because they've been using sunglasses from when they're young. And, you know, I have to, my little daughter's 4 now and I've got to go with them, tell the teachers not to put all the sunscreen on her, not to put on the big hat the whole time, that she doesn't need sunglasses like all her friends. And it's just this narrative and this belief that's been entrenched in people that is so hard to break. Well, when the ophthalmologists, the eye specialists are saying that you need to wear sunglasses and put suntan cream on the dermatologist and it leads to cancer. Well, you know, what hope does the public have? What hope do our children have when they believing this narrative the whole time? And it's a real battle to fight and pioneer, you know, against these things. And that's why I want to honor you and just celebrate you speaking out like this, because you're the only ophthalmologist that I know that is speaking in this way. I mean, contact lenses, you know, you try and speak to optometrists. I've got friends that are 20 years. We know each other. They're optometrists and they think I'm crazy. They think I'm absolutely crazy about contact lenses and sunglasses. And I understand it's their business, but then the truth is not setting them free. And I think that's a real problem. They enslave to this narrative.
Well, I've got a couple of colleagues that actually work with me who I have talked about this for a couple of years. They've kind of bought in. They're not speaking out, so to speak, because they're, you know, a little bit worried that, you know, their jobs may come under scrutiny. But, you know, I'm really going to speak out. I don't really care what the narrative is. Unfortunately, there are some powers that control healthcare in America, and we've seen that tremendously this past year with people speaking out or, you know, actually talking about true science, where, you know, they get, you know, there's some political pressures, and that comes from big pharma. It comes from surgical corporations. But unfortunately, I think healthcare has been influenced. There's a lot of money being made on sunscreens, sunglasses, I mean, contact lenses, intraocular lenses. So they're really not interested in changing that paradigm to something that's more natural where they can't profit. And unfortunately, that's what's driving healthcare, at least in America.
Okay. So I do want to pivot to vitamin A, you know, how important it is that it stays bound. And although that's a weak covalent bond in humans and how important that is and what vitamin A does if it gets released from that bond, tell us a little bit more about exogenous vitamin A and the importance of it staying bound.
Yeah, I think it's really important to get that, you know, you can, obviously there are sources nutritionally of vitamin A, but particularly from the retina standpoint, the vitamin A cycle, as you mentioned earlier, every opsin in our body is bound to vitamin A. It's an important vitamin for the function of those. But when you are constantly exposed to high energy blue or artificial light, you completely disrupt the vitamin A cycle. And so when you have, that's retinol, when you have basically free retinol, not only does it destroy the photoreceptors, but it makes you less able to actually access and use the proper sun that we're exposed to. And so it creates a complete loss of photonic energy, timing, energy information, just because there's not enough, the vitamin A cycles completely disrupted. The other thing is, you know, with free vitamin A, when it destroys, photoreceptors, you know, I treat a lot of macular degeneration patients. I have this conversation all the time. And, you know, the recommendations are to take high doses of vitamin A, vitamin E. But, you know, what they can really do if they want to help protect their vitamin A cycle is get exposed to particularly morning and evening sun, because it is the infrared light is unbelievably regenerative. And the morning sun is helpful for regenerating photoreceptors. And then not exposing yourself to nighttime, which is when the cones, the photoreceptors for color vision, are actually supposed to regenerate. But if you're completely, you know, if you're not blocking artificial light after sunset, you don't give those photoreceptors an opportunity to regenerate. Your vitamin A cycle is disrupted. You actually destroy photoreceptors. So you're much more likely to progress or even develop macular degeneration. We're seeing explosive prevalence of that in the modern world because of these principles.
So if people have to adopt the correct circadian rhythm and the correct light diet early, it's going to possibly prevent macular degeneration.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no question.
Wow, that's huge. Tell me about dry eyes. I've been seeing a lot of that, I think it's possibly got to do with the fact that, you know, blue light screens and all those things. You know, what can people practically do with dry eyes?
Yeah, it's a really common problem. In fact, you know, I get referred a lot of patients who've done everything for dry eyes that the pharmaceutical companies will give them. Well, what we know is that artificial light increases inflammation, not only in the skin, but on the surface of the eye. And the eye, you know, the mucous membranes of the eye have a very intricate process for producing tears. The tears are a multi-layer, but there's multiple cells involved in that. When you are constantly exposed to artificial light, it just like everywhere in the body, it increases the reactive oxygen species. So inflammation is the cause of dry eye. And so if you're promoting inflammation with your light environment, with a lack of omega-3s in your diet, then you're going to get dry eyes. And I call dry eye a canary in the coal mine. Just like myopia for younger people is a canary in a coal mine, it's the early signs of blue light toxicity. And so if you've got, just like with young people, if they're progressing in their myopia, you need to get them outside, get them in the sun, get them off of their devices. No question, because dopamine's getting suppressed in the retina. Mm-hmm. Well, if someone has, and I'm seeing this in the 20 to 30 year olds because they are on screens constantly. When 20 years ago, I saw dry eyes in the 60 to 70 year olds or older. Wow. Now it's in the early, you know, 20s and 30s. And it's because of the light environment. So what I tell people is you have to get off your screens. You have to get outside, particularly in the morning and evening. The red light, the infrared light in the sun is going to regenerate the surface. We actually use this paradigm with dry eye patients all the time. And I have a webinar Wednesday night actually talking about these very things. Brilliant. I do think that blocking artificial light with blue blockers, if someone is a computer worker, I completely recommend that they use a yellow blue blocker that blocks 100% of blue light. And if you're going to be on a screen for 8 hours a day, which many of these folks are, and then it's, as I mentioned earlier, it's important to quantum sample, go outside. You've gotten your morning and evening sun, go outside intermittently during the day to kind of reset. Because remember, the cell cycles are controlled by your suprachiasmatic nucleus. If your cell cycles are off all over your body, you're going to create inflammation. And so the light environment's absolutely important for the dry eye patient.
I wanted a question about infrared sauna. I've done a lot of research in a company called Sauna Space that I use frequently. It's an incandescent bulb. It's got mid and near infrared that I find very beneficial. It's got no electromagnetic fields. I'm a registered and certified geobiologist from measuring non-native electromagnetic fields. Can this be a biohack? Because I find it incredibly valuable. I can go out in the sun longer if I look at the red light and the infrared light mid and near on my skin. I don't burn as easily. And you can see I've spent 2 hours in the sun, 3 hours at UV 11 today. And straight away, no redness. It just goes straight into this brown color. Tell me about the use of infrared.
Yeah. So, you know, photobiomodulation is not a new concept. It's new in the modern healthcare. And I think you're exactly right. If you're using it the way you're using it, I think, unfortunately, some people think it is a substitute for sun. And so, but what you're doing is you're supplementing. I completely agree with you. There's a form of hybrid tanning where you precondition your skin with infrared light, and it absolutely makes you more tolerant of UV. And, you know, it's interesting because if you think about the morning sun, if you get exposed in the morning, you're getting mostly UV. I mean, mostly infrared, not a lot of UV. Mm-hmm. That actually preconditions you as well. So what you're doing is you're biohacking that and doing it on a much higher level. And yeah, so on a spaces are great. I have a Clear Light sauna, which I have actually I supplemented it with another type EMR tech. So I'm getting hyper infrared, and I use it as well. I typically use it more in the wintertime, or like you did, I'll do some exposure before I'm going to be in the strong UV in the summertime. But I think that's a great, but photobiomodulation, in my opinion, can be a medical therapy. And Tina Carew out of Russia has great studies on where it's really like medical therapy equivalent to pharmaceuticals. And if you understand how infrared light affects mitochondria, it makes sense.
Great. Two more questions. I know we're coming to the end of the show, and I'm very grateful for your time. Is we've obviously got a lot of Africans here in South Africa, you know, really dark black skin, and I see them avoiding the sun, you know, just especially the wealthier ones that are now middle class or upper class. I mean, obviously the people that don't have much, that are, you know, poverty stricken, they're outside. They don't have a lot of, you know, junk light. They use these sort of paraffin lamps, you know, these incandescent bulbs and those type of things. But tell me the concern. I've got a huge concern because I live in Africa and I see how dark their skins are, yet they're living indoors. What is going to happen to those people who need significant amount of time outside in the sun?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. If you look at ancestrally, the environments that different, you know, Fitzpatrick skin types evolved in, it's purely evolutionary biology. And so for someone like me, I have a Fitzpatrick II. I'm a Northern European Scottish descent. Because the environment of sun there in my evolution from my ancestry was much lower, my skin is more sensitive, even to the point that I have to be careful if I go to the equator. Well, if your ancestry is from closer to the equator, obviously your skin is much better at tolerating UV, which is a good thing. But it also means that you need more sun exposure than someone with a lighter skin tone in order to create, because melanin, which is a great thing, and I wish I had more of it, honestly, but it actually protects you. It's like an insulator. It absorbs UV, but you need more of it to get the same photonic benefit, the same quantum yield. So I would, and we're seeing that in the U.S. You know, people of darker skin tones who move to a northern latitude, their vitamin D levels are just horrible, and it's taken its toll on them. And we saw that with COVID-19, unfortunately. But we've got to get the message out. I mean, for everyone needs to be outside more. But the darker, the more melanin you have in your skin, that's indicating that your evolutionary biology, you were designed to be in stronger UV more. Which, you know, it's, and you can evolve to, if you have lighter skin tones, to actually improve your melanin content. But unfortunately, if you have higher melanin content, being indoors, you can't evolve to that, because that's an alien sun that your skin has no answer for.
Yeah. Last question, Doc, is something that I ask all the guests, and it goes something like this, is that to maintain your sustained transformation, the lifestyle habits is such a challenge. People often, when they're sick, they'll follow a program for 6 months, maybe a year, maybe 2 years. The research shows that if people lose weight, significant amount of weight, 80 to 95% of them regain that weight within 5 years and even more. Give us some ideas. Obviously, you've got 4 kids. You've seen a lot of patients in 22 years. How do people maintain this sustained transformation?
You know, that's a great question. I think, unfortunately, in the modern world, I think a lot of it has to do with our dopamine levels. I think mental resilience and sticking to a certain lifestyle has to do with, you know, your thought processes. If you can make the connection that I did this process, my life got better, I'm thinking better, then I think you will persist in it. And that's where I think the light environment is critically important, because, you know, dopamine is that neurotransmitter for critical thinking, and it allows you to connect dots that otherwise you'd be completely blind to. And when people actually start thinking better, they start living better. and you can make decisions that, and that's why, you know, the suicide rates are going up so much, because dopamine levels are getting severely depleted and people can't understand that, you know, I'm going to choose life. Well, it's the same thing in your daily life. You're either going to choose, make a decision today that's going to help you tomorrow, or a decision that's going to hurt you tomorrow. And so I think if we can improve people's dopamine levels overall, and there's many ways to do that, but light is a very critical part of that, then I think we can get people to sustain that decision-making, which gives them a better life tomorrow.
Excellent. And I just want to thank you. I celebrate you. I want to declare favor and blessing over you, your children, your grandchildren, to the next generation, that you would carry on speaking the truth, that you would break enslavement, enslavement and control that wants to control people, that wants to keep them bound to pharmaceuticals, bound to financial systems, bound to debt. There's an enslavement that's going on for me that is very vivid and very clear, that we need to stand together and break, that people may be free, truly free. And obviously that's another conversation that we want to discuss from a Trinitarian point of view. But I want to thank you, and I just want to just bless you, because you've been just an inspiration. And I'm so glad that Dr. Jack put us together. And I just trust that your days are filled with much grace and much truth.
Yeah. Thank you. And God bless you. I appreciate your thoughts there.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Made to Thrive show. New episodes are released weekly and are published exclusively on the Made to Thrive podcast link. If you're interested in receiving more thriving insights, as well as receiving other exclusive member benefits, visit madetothrive.co.za/subscribe. This podcast is for general information purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of healthcare professionals for any such conditions.